Okay, shifting gears now, we're going to have multiple speakers on these different parts. What we're trying to do here is now talk about the actual initiative, the Open Ontology Repository. What is it? Overview, rationale, and motivations. I'll mention that. I'll talk about that. What do users expect, and how do these needs align with the rationale? Ken will talk about that, Ken Bukowski. How do these needs translate into OOR system requirements? How do these satisfy that rationale? Evan Wallace will talk about that. What are some existing efforts? How do these address or satisfy the rationale? Bruce Bargmeier. So for all of these, we want to kind of point back to the rationale and how these things address them, keep that narrative going. And then finally, what is a roadmap to developing and delivering these requirements in an OOR implementation effort? How does the roadmap satisfy the rationale? There's some history. So the history here is we've recognized the need for an open ontology repository. And so the co-conveners of this, basically Peter, Mike, and myself, had some antecedents here. Mike supported the DAML Ontology Library in another lifetime. We had a MITRE internal study on OWL and RDF registry and repository requirements a couple years back, 2005. Unfortunately, it's not publicly released, so otherwise we'd make more than snippets available. The reason it was the organization that we did this for no longer exists. So it's waiting for somebody that will never be there. And 2002, 2005, Peter's SIM3, CWE, I don't know the expansion of those. Collaborative Work Environment. Collaborative Ontology Development Service. Earlier this year, January 3rd, Open Ontology Repository Initiative, our initial planning meeting, where we, you know, proposed having this as the theme for this summit. Then the 23rd of January, the founding members, we had our initial conference call. And so the initiative came into being with about 40 participants, and that includes so these are not necessarily Ontology Summit participants, but OOR initiative participants, some active, some observers. And we adopted a mission statement. February 7th, we adopted the definition of Ontology Repository, which I think was included in the communique. And 28th of February through the 10th of April, we joined the Ontology Summit 2008 effort and co-organized the four OOR panel sessions, which will be covered by the other speakers. So these include the technology landscape, expectations and requirements, and ontology of ontologies. The OOR team virtual activities were hosted within the Ontolog collaborative environment, at least for the time being. We expect that to change, so stay tuned. The charter of the OOR initiative is to promote the global use and sharing of ontologies by establishing a hosted registry repository, enabling, facilitating open, federated, collaborative ontology repositories, and establishing best practices for expressing interoperable ontology and taxonomy work in registry repositories. We don't want to preclude controlled vocabularies, obviously, as the communique states. Where an ontology repository is a facility where ontologies and related information artifacts can be stored, retrieved, and managed. This was in the communique too. Homepage is listed at the bottom. The rationale and motivations, why are we interested in this and what purpose does it serve? We stated a kind of partially rhetorical question about isn't the semantic web notion of distributed islands of semantics sufficient as a kind of de facto repository? You know, meaning if you put it out there, will they come? If you build it better and put it out there, will they prefer yours? We don't think that history shows that this laissez-faire kind of field of dreams is really good reality. The clickable web has been very successful in employing this strategy for HTML documents, but the use and content of a semantic web has different characteristics. Makes it far less tolerant of change and the frequent errors, which we tolerate and are commonplace on the HTML-based web. So we're distinguishing characteristics of the semantic web, but obviously we're going beyond it too. So we're not necessarily focused just on semantic web, as I thought, you know, we made clear in the communique. We're focusing on semantic technologies, but we think that we can assist that semantic web effort with some of these other technologies and this infrastructure. So distinguishing characteristics, machines rather than humans are the primary consumers of content. Errors that a human may be able to diagnose and fix are likely fatal for machine processing. Use of imports in OWL, for example, it creates a strong transitive dependency between the individual ontology documents. And changes in those may have, will have impacts on yours, your importing ontology, and you may not realize it. Hence, it could mean that the closure causes inconsistency or change of meaning. Ontologies convey precise meaning with an unambiguous machine interpretation. Obviously, this means that when you're using this content, you have to be careful in selecting and making precise the references. Rationale and motivations, too. Value added to the content by an OOR. We want the OOR to be reliably available. It's persistent and sustainable, so you can be confident when committing to its use. It has information about when, why, and how an ontology has changed, so you can be aware of changes that may affect its usability. You can find the ontologies easily. They're registered, these ontologies, so you know who built them and associated other metadata. This metadata provides information about the purpose, the KR language, the content representational language, the user group, the content subject area, etc. The OOR includes mapping, so you can connect ontologies to other ontologies. The content has quality and value as gauged by recognized criteria and supported metadata. The OOR supports services, so the ontologies can map and be mapped, find and be found, can review, certify, and be reviewed, certified, especially if you have sentient ontologies. No. You can hook in your own services and use the services others have hooked in. Ontologies can reuse or extend other ontologies, including common, middle, and upper ontologies. And the OOR can be easily extended. We are also pointing to, again, this definition that we had about registry versus repository goals, etc. It's something I think I posted myself. Okay, what we want to do is shift now to the individual other sections, unless there's questions or comments. Okay, Ken, thank you.
So I'm going to be discussing the user needs, and then those will in turn be converted into requirements that Evan will discuss. And what I'm going to be focusing on mainly is discussing those overall needs that we identified and linking them back to the rationale. Now, as you can see, in a repository is defined to be an ontology. The OR is an ontology repository, a facility that ontologies and related information artifacts can be stored, retrieved, and managed. So it's a persistent store, it's a registry, and then progressively additional value-added services as described in the rationale. Ontology includes any artifacts in the entire ontology spectrum as specified in the last ontology summit. And the intention is for it to be open. We have now, I think, established to some degree exactly, or to some degree, what that means. Now, what are those needs? We had a series of panels where the various speakers described the kinds of needs that they had, and then we asked each of those speakers to submit two slides containing the most important needs from their point of view, from their for their particular communities. There are a variety of users for these ontology for an ontology repository. Those who develop, institutions that will be supporting and maintaining these ontologies, end users who are going to be searching and browsing and using ontologies in various ways, software agents who will be using the ontologies, and application developers. The repository may possibly be used both at design time and at runtime, where you will dynamically on the fly be retrieving information from the repository. These are the user needs panels, listing there of the panelists and the days when those took place. And then the top needs that we identified are listed here. They, to a large extent, this covers much of the same ground that we just covered in the ontology summit so far these last 2 days. Basically, we need a persistent store for the ontology, for the ontologies. We need a way of registering them, governing them using indicating the provenance and versioning support, and making them available so that they can be browsed, discovered, queried, analyzed, validated, and reused. And there's of course, this issue of openness. We need to ensure that they are not encumbered by intellectual property right constraints in terms of access and reuse. And there should be support for services then that can cut across all these various ontological artifacts and support cross-domain interoperability mapping and inferencing. There are a number of citations there that I gave there to the panel discussions and various input that came afterwards. Now, what I'm going to show here are those some of those slides that were contributed, the pair of slides from the panelists, and I put a little annotation in green boxes as links back to the rationale. So I just have little boxes indicating this is why, you know, an example of the kind of need that is addressed in the rationale slide that you saw a moment ago, the one that indicated the value-added aspects of the open ontology repository. So here is Peter Benson's, one of Peter Benson's slide where he talks about common metadata. Of course, metadata was an important aspect of the value add. And another important point was an end to incomplete data. We want this repository to be reliable and available. We want an end to inaccurate information. So there's an emphasis there on quality and value. I guess his slogan down at the bottom is faster data, better data, cheaper data. I'm not sure how exactly all of those fit the rationale, but you can see more or less one can map them. Here he's got another slide where he reiterates these points in a large diagram, showing the how the standards are used to automate the data supply chain. Then Rex Brooks provided an excellent talk discussing the repository architecture in the context of the emergency data exchange and the reference information model for that, and the major value adds that are highlighted there are the ability to register ontologies and find them, and then in the next slide you then bind to the ontologies, and at that point you can query and browse them. So there's, perhaps I should have also annotated there, it was also the aspect of the reliability and availability that should be indicated perhaps on the left there. So, yes. Oh, it's not getting me? Okay. So going on to, this was a talk that I gave jointly with Neil Sarkar, who's from the Marine Biological Laboratory. So these are user needs from the point of view of the community there. This is the biomedical and biodiversity communities. There you see the ability to browse and query the ontologies, particularly small segments of the ontology, because the ontologies in that field can be huge, as indeed they can be in many other fields. So this is an example of ontology services. It's also good to have the ability to dynamically curate and suggest changes. So change management is certainly an important issue for this community. The ontologies there are changing continually. Ideally, it can be used to navigate across inferred information. So here, the inferred information crosses ontology boundaries, so you need the ability to map the ontologies because of the great diversity of ontologies that occur in biomedical and biodiversity fields. Then from the point of view of the end user, again, they're pretty much the same kinds of issues. You need ontology mapping. You need change management. You need metadata. And ideally, and this is the last one that kind of really is interesting from their point of view, the ability to support scientific hypothesis testing would be facilitated by the ability to extend the OOR for this particular domain so that the OOR would have additional features beyond what you would have just for the OOR in general. So you might have a particular OORs set up for this community that would have these additional features, these additional capabilities. So having a flexible extension mechanism would be very useful there. Let me get through this quickly. Mala Mehrotra, who gave an excellent demonstration yesterday, gave us some very interesting examples of how one can identify ontology mappings that can then be used for reuse and extension. And in her talk, she went through a number of these issues, and then her tool, the Exposé tool, addresses these issues and demonstrated them last night. Finally, Doug Lennett from PsyCorp raised the issue of the IP constraints, the rights, the IP rights that we have to address. So he emphasized that you need to have some Creative Commons license so that you're not encumbered by all these intellectual property constraints. In addition, you need to retain provenance, lineage, and of the contributed content. That's registration, metadata information. And finally, you need to have a small set of inter-ontology alignment relations. That's the ontology mapping ontology, the mapping ontology that we were discussing just a few minutes ago. And he went on to give some examples of the size of some of these ontologies. Psych in particular is really a very enormous ontology. Any ontology repository is going to be really tested by being able to manage an ontology of that scale. So in kind of summarizing all this, the needs and the rationale seem to be fairly well aligned. They map well. A community OOR will provide us with knowledge value, collaborative value, shared process value beyond what you'd get from just the clickable web. And further to the intellectual discourse on what it should be, implementers should also answer some important questions such as sustainability. How can you be sure that these ontologies are still going to be around in 100 years? So what can be done to assure this? This is certainly an important issue which wasn't really directly addressed by any of the speakers in the panels, but certainly it is an important issue. How do we ensure these long-term values? Because it's going to be difficult to get individuals to buy into the ontology, to contribute to the ontology repository, if they feel that it's just going to disappear, and you know, when people lose interest in the server. So now I'd like to turn the floor over to Evan, who's going to take the next step and turn these needs into requirements.
Okay. Okay, there's a number of slides here that sort of give the motivation for my involvement and Elisa Kendall's involvement, which are kind of tied because it's really related to the OMG, what's happening at OMG. But I'm not going to go through those slides, so they're just there for reference. So when I joined this activity, I guess some of the more substantive discussions about requirements had already occurred, so I didn't see them. But I was getting frustrated that we weren't talking about what kind of architectures we would be using, sort of fairly detailed terms. And without requirements out there, I couldn't see how we could talk about architectures to meet those requirements. So I sort of started a discussion with some very minimal requirements and proposed a number of architectures that might work to meet those requirements. And Todd Schneider replied with a nice set of requirements that he got from looking over all the slides from the many panel sessions that we had. And you've seen that summary a number of times in the past couple of days. And this slide just talks about some of the categories, just general requirements, things to support search and querying, things to support notification, change management, handling, and then other kinds of management of content and associated metadata. So here's where I started. I mean, we need to have some really basic requirements, and what you choose here for the languages supported really has a major effect on the systems that are already out there that we could kind of start with to support an OOR that we want, right? So my point of view is that the bare minimum is the AL recommendation-based content plus common logic-based comment. So first-order logic and description logic plus AL full maybe. When I say AL there, I really mean AL DL and maybe AL full. And I think people familiar with both of those languages would have an expectation that shortly they would get support for things that are extensions of those languages, like AL2. There already is a lot of tool support for something called AL 1.1, which is now morphed into the AL Working Group activity to revise AL, which we now call AL2, and I'm involved in that. This adds some expressivity in some key areas, including data type, numerical data types, and restrictions related to that. But that's still not enough for a lot of us. So it would be nice, especially with the capabilities you could get in an ontology repository, to be able to tie that, supplement an AL2 description with SWRL rules. So that's a natural way to go. For CL, it would be nice to go to IKL, especially to have a nice language for specifying the mappings between the common logic content and some of these other contents like AL or RDFS. I just made some guesses at what we might want to add in addition to that, what people might want to cover vocabularies. In the OMG point of view, there's a lot of people that are interested in business point of view, so the semantics for business vocabularies and rules is an important specification for them. And a number of activities we're aware of are using that specification to try to get some semantics.
You might want to support RIF, too.
RIF I would have put in the next level after. Yeah, so that should be in this list. Yes? AL Prime. So that's they call it what we now call a profile, but yeah, okay, because that one has actually slightly different semantics because it has rule involvement in it, production rule style rules. Okay, that's a good point.
So why is RDFS not a bare minimum?
Because it's weak logically, its semantics are weak. Now, if the AL in the top includes AL full, then RDFS is free. Okay. But I mean, all these points are arguable. I mean, we've not reached any agreement. But I thought at least in this group, AL plus common logic would be a minimum that most people would agree to.
Well, so I say that because there are a lot of groups doing SCoS control vocabularies. Maybe they are ontologies or not, but I think they could possibly be an addition for the repository. So
that's why I put it first on the list. I was thinking the same way. Okay. So I think one of the first things we really need to do as we come out of this is agree on this list. Yes, Robbie. So UML is not a logical language. You can use it to capture. You can think of you could use a profile of it to capture a number of these logical languages. But if you have this supported, then really what that means for the repository is that you might want it to export it in, say, an ODM form, right? So it's not it's not sort of a first class support for the language.
Related to this, and also to Ken, is the same question. At development time, you want certain notations and visual notations, and UML is helpful for that.
Right.
And also, hopefully, in near future, it will become connectable to executable type of realizations or instances, not necessarily only for ontology, but for a lot of other software support services.
Right. So that's the services bit that we had in the sort of should list, right? And personally, my point of view, I don't see these repositories as playing a big role for development I mean, I think you would have tooling that could do that, but they could. So you could exchange forms during development, and you might want to support some UML-like form. So any other questions? No. I mean, actually, a question I have is, when do we want to do this? When do we want to decide this? Should I bring this question on the list tomorrow? No. Frank? Oh, that's right.
Is there anything like a timetable for either OWL2 or for Pickle?
So I don't. Okay, I can address the OWL part. I can't address the Icarus-Sickle part, but maybe somebody else can. So the working group is on a 16-month schedule, and we started, I don't know, around October. So, you know, it should be done sometime late, you know, early summer next year. There's already tooling support, but, of course, the language is moving, so... And that means that there's actually two reasoners that already support the OWL 1.1 version of this. So, Michael, you want to speak to the Icarus stuff?
Well, I think because Common Logic was just published, finally published as an ISO standard just in this past year, people are still catching up on coming up with theorem provers for Common Logic. And I think there was a fair bit of fatigue in the group before moving on to ICL. So I don't think there is any organized effort right now. Well, so people are working on. I mean, people are thinking of working on ICL provers, but I don't think there's a formal effort to kind of.
First of all, there is no formal proof theory, as far as I know.
Exactly.
And the second thing, people started to work on reasoner, but as far as I know, and I spoke to Pat Hayes just recently, there is no implementation.
Well, there is no theorem prover for Common Logic.
Yeah.
For the full Common Logic yet. People are still struggling with that. So, but in terms of if you look at OWL 2 as being a standard, there's no effort for ICL, no formal effort.
Right, but isn't it really an extension or a what he calls a
No,
a dialect?
It's a superset of Common Logic, that's true.
And you can translate Common Logic to KIF, for which there are theorem provers, therefore...
No.
Kind of. You can't anymore?
Yeah, not. I don't think so.
Okay, I thought you used to be able to, or at least Bill Anderson had done something like that at one point to translate.
It sounds like a side conversation offline or on the list. Maybe.
The date, Evan, for the OWL working group to end is the 1st of July, 2009.
And so far, I think the chairs are very adamant about meeting that date. I always thought it was unrealistic, but... Okay, so moving on. So I went through the slide that Ken discussed on the top 10 needs and sort of unpacked each one of the bullets, and that's what this is. They were pretty dense bullets. So this is just a different version of the requirements. So the first bullet was well-maintained persistent store with high availability and performance for storage, sharing, and access. So that means we have to have maintenance mechanisms and interfaces, and we may, and personally I think we're going to have to support additional sort of community-based maintenance, just from what we've seen on the web. Counting on the author to do it is not going to work. Users have a need to do it. If they could, you know, repair things and put them out there in a way that people could reuse, I'm sure that would happen. Long-term storage, obviously, there are all kinds of schemes to make that available. Persistent references are really important. We can't go changing the naming schemes all the time, so everybody's references break in their import statements in their files. So we need to come up with some good scheme that will last and stick to it. Of course, you need to have adequate throughput or nobody's going to be able to use the repository. And a bare minimum is HTTP support for uploading, downloading. And I would think to support hash instead of support slash in addition to hash URIs, we would need the 3-of-3 handling. So the second bullet, ontology content is properly registered, whatever that means, governed with provenance and versioning support, and made available logically. So this is the federation bit. In one place so that it can be browsed, discovered, queried, analyzed, validated, and reused. So this one really unpacks to a lot of things. Clearly, interfaces for registration and management must be supported for people to be able to do these things. Must support mechanisms for storage and retrieval of associated provenance data. And have to handle versioning of the content plus all the metadata that goes with that. That needs to be handled properly. And I know Natasha talked a lot about that idea. And since we're talking about it being federated, we must provide mechanisms to integrate all this stuff, all the data that's out there, and provide that one view. Support user browsing of the content and the associated metadata, but also machine and user interfaces for the querying and access to support the analyzing, machine analyzing. Okay, allow ontologies to be open and unencumbered. I think what we really meant was required, didn't we? And we certainly need to capture the information about the licensing. And this all came out in our earlier discussions today, so that's kind of review. Provide services across disparate artifacts. Okay, this one I couldn't quite parse. To support cross-domain interoperability, mapping application and making inferences, and having such semantic services be properly registered and available. So this is a lot of different things kind of conflated here, including this sort of registry of services for ontologies and supporting inferences in the registry. I think, and this business of mappings, a lot of this is a research area. So this is certainly not a basic requirement, in my view. And part of that research is to define the mappings. We talked about that already. Need to understand what these semantic services are that we're talking about. How to move on from here? We need to refine these things and agree on these requirements. We need to start thinking about the architectures because it's sort of an iterative process developing an architecture. Once you make some design choices, then there are other requirements that fall out from that. We also need to think about, you know, how this is going to the business rules associated with managing these things and the interfaces required to support those. Some of this trust of metadata could be handled by automatically generating some of that metadata by using, you know, running the reasoners and then storing it and not having the person doing the registration actually putting that data up for you. So we need to define the interfaces to do these things and, of course, the data requirements. This one or the one?
Question. You say this is a research area to talk about semantic services. If you're doing mappings and you're going back and forth between various ontologies, if you don't understand the semantics, but only the syntax, and physically you can interoperate things, but semantically you may get garbage out.
So I'm talking about what kind of, when you say semantic services, I assume you mean reasoners, or some kind of reasoning service. So what I'm asking is, what kind of reasoning services are we talking about? Of course, some mappings are already provided by the languages, and we want better ones. You know, AL imports is not very good, and there are a lot of concerns there. So that's probably a mapping problem that we should look at. Okay. Any other questions? All right.
Better matching
as we have pattern matching, the semantic, what was the word that you used in the last adjective?
Semantic services?
Yes, could include comparison, like concept maps comparison and pattern matches.
Yeah, that's pattern matching is not necessarily semantic service, but yeah. And this business also of the semantic difference. Yeah.
Thank you.
So next speaker.
It's useful in reuse.
They are.
We need to wrap up.
The pattern matching that Ravi was talking about is useful in reuse of sets of axioms. They're not necessarily for inferencing.
Okay, well, I hadn't seen these slides before, so I... okay. I'm sorry?
I was just following up on Ravi's comment about the patterns that you see. They can be useful for reuse, just to store it for reuse, not necessarily for inferencing. I mean, so for creating more... You know, like in telemetry systems, you have a lot of times sets of axioms which are similar across satellites, and you want to just store them for patterns, you know. So.
Yeah, well, I think that's, for me, the primary reason for having an ontology repository is for the reuse.
Yeah.
So that's why I keep questioning this idea of embedding these services in.
Yeah, no, you made the comment that it for inferencing, And this is orthogonal to that. They're
right.
Not necessarily.
Yes, there are plenty of use cases for that don't require these semantic services we're talking about. Okay, so yes, of course, we need to define the metadata. That's definitely a big part of our activity, and that's what we've been calling the ontology for ontology.
This is Michael's two slides.
Okay. Yes, I'm surprised by these slides. I really don't have anything to say about them. My time's up. So, actually, okay. So, when it comes to expressivity of some of the material, not just the languages. Some tools like Pellet actually give you a description of the expressivity of the OWL that is submitted to it. And so that's another mechanism for getting that metadata from something automated rather than from somebody telling you what it is. I'm sorry? It probably does it with Pellet, or does it have it natively?
I don't know. I can check.
So tools do it. And which is, I think, a really nice feature. It's really not that hard to do a lot of the things we're talking about doing. Yeah, in OWL. Yeah, I know.
So we'll describe the description logic that it represents.
That's what I mean. Yes, you know, Shoik or Shriek or Shoin D or whatever. Yes.
We saw the Pellet demo yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't there for that. Okay. So is this – okay, yes. And from my point of view, so this is another thing. Is if we had OWL rather than OWL plus Common Logic, we could just use OMV as a starting point, and it does most of the work for us. But since we don't, we might want to just extend OMV or use one of these other things. So. Okay, so who's the next speaker? Are we? Is this still my slide? Or?
This is the mappings between the requirements and pointing back to the rationale.
Okay. Well, I had mapped from the needs to the requirements, and Ken had mapped from the needs to the rationale. So I thought we already had this done.
Okay.
Thank you.
I see people already drifting towards the door or looking that way, hopefully. And so I'll go quite quickly here. On the 28th of February, there was a panel session, and a few people gave presentations. Each of the presenters sent a couple slides for this, and so I'll be giving short shrift to much finer presentations. First, I'm going to say about the Extended Metadata Registry. There's a project that several organizations got together to make input, propose specifications for the next edition of ISO IEC 11179, and built a prototype registry to demonstrate that the proposed specifications could actually be implemented, could be loaded with content, could be accessed. And so what that effort brings to the table are some use cases, semantics challenges and requirements, potential design specifications. These are proposed for 11179 edition 3. It's got a UML model, definitions, an OWL ontology. It's got a modular software architecture. I'll show you that in a second. It's open source. There's test content, concept systems, including thesauri, taxonomies, ontologies. And it's got a group of participants that have a considerable experience in the area. At any rate, take a look at xmdr.org. So here is a picture of the modular architecture. I think I'm actually going to make it bigger. And so essentially, the modules that are in blue are things that we implemented, and the selections of software are indicated. Each of the modules could be implemented with a wide variety of software, be it open source or commercial software. The essence of it is you've got a registry store, you've got some way to get content into the registry, and you've got some means of getting it out of the registry. And so you've got a human user face and an API. So these are the bits, and we have populated them quite extensively. Then let me go on to the DAML ontology library. This was created early in the DARPA Agent Markup Language program. It was meant to organize content, to promote reuse, to demonstrate adoption. Almost 300 DAML plus OWL ontologies, OWL ontologies were submitted from 2000 to 2003. It's cited in several International Semantic Web Conference papers. It was largely replaced by Ontaria and the Schema Web. It's available at this URL, and the DAML.org website is archived at the W3C. Some lessons learned, curation and quality control. Many users desired some indication of use and quality of the ontologies. I think we've addressed that today. Caching, many of the links subsequently became unavailable, so it's desired to actually store and make available local copies. There was quite a bit of discussion of this that went on yesterday, various ideas of its successes and failures. I believe it probably succeeded in doing what it was funded and intended to do, and had never the intent of being what we're trying to define here as a OOR. The National Center for Biomedical Ontology is developing a bioportal, an open source, a repository of ontologies, terminologies, and thesauri of importance to biomedicine. An early version of the bioportal is accessible at that URL. Users can access the bioportal content interactively via web browsers or programmatically via web services. The ontology repository functionality, things that BioPortal will offer, ontology repository functionality, linkages among different ontologies, community-based peer review and ontology annotation, linkages between ontology content and related online data repositories, and support for communities of ontology users and developers. Mark went on to give us a very nice demonstration of this, which Natasha Noy updated last night, so several of you have seen this. The OASIS EBXML registry repository, it's a generic registry repository standard. Notice at this level, they haven't decided between registry and repository, but they have a electronic business registry implementation or information model, registry information model, and the electronic business registry services. These are OASIS standards that were then taken to ISO TC 154 and progressed as the 15,000 series of standards. Version 4 is expected in 2008. It's highly extensible. It's not specifically an ontology repository, but might be made so. It has a OWL Lite profile, and that's an approved specification. It has a rich feature set to support use cases and architectures, and here's a list of at least some of them: extensible metamodel, extensible protocol, stored queries, extensible relations, service model, validation, cataloging, subscription, and so on. The freebie XML registry provides a royalty-free open source implementation, and it's more of a toolkit than an out-of-the-box solution. So some ideas about EBXML registry repository as an OOR server. We could build upon RegRep 4.0 implementation from Wellfleet software, implement an OWL Lite profile, especially out of RegRep 4. RegRep does not provide an ontology-specific UI, so we might use Protégé. The RegRep services integrate the RegRep 4.0 with Protégé, such that RegRep services serves as the back end for multi-user Protégé client, and so that the Protégé reasoning engine could serve as a reasoner plugin for the RegRep. So initially deploy a single root OOR instance with pilot users playing various roles in collaborative ontology management, and use OpenID as distributed identity management solution, then later facilitate deployment of community-specific OORs. And that, I think, And then this is SIM3, a hosting facility. This is a new slide that I hadn't seen in my... SIM3 is potential in OOR to provide the plumbing for the bottom layer of the technology stack, a robust hosted hardware and network infrastructure for the OOR. The SIM3 has a very robust network facility and server facility that we could make considerable use of. They provide a collaborative work environment for the OOR team, which we've been using throughout this whole effort and certainly been using today. And they could help to facilitate the distributed teamwork, project coordination, and management. So I think none of these that I just presented is a whole OOR solution, but some assemblages of them could all contribute to our effort, I believe.
Okay. I'm going to present a proposed plan that we think addresses the rationale and at least many of the issues that have been addressed, have been raised the last couple of days. It's useful to think of OOR going forward as three separate things, and I'll address each of these in subsequent slides. But basically, the first is an open source software platform. The second is one or more public instantiations of that platform. And then the third is an organization, basically, that will exist to provide and support the other two. One of the benefits, I think, of the approach suggested here is that there's a lot of inherent parallelism in it. So basically, we can facilitate contributions by a lot of people without an overwhelming amount of coordination between them. So I think it's actually useful to think of the OOR in terms of the software platform as being somewhat like Apache, in that you have basically an architectural framework, a small number of core modules that are providing critical capabilities like the web-based interface, some of the web services interface, and so forth, and then a lot of optional modules that people that are instantiating instances of OOR basically can pick and choose what they want. This actually is sort of grouped by many of the dimensions that we've been talking about today. So, for instance, for quality and gatekeeping, if an instance decides that it wants market-based approaches versus reviewed approaches versus heavily curated approaches, basically it can select which of those modules that it would use. Similarly, for different languages that are supported for a lot of the tools, even for federation, I think there may be multiple options, basically, that people may want to select on, depending on who they're federating with, and I'll touch on some of that in a later slide. Even some of the repository functions, there may be some people who really just want to instantiate a registry aren't concerned about the having the actual repository thing. So I think there's room to make that a module as well, perhaps different persistence options underneath as well, and many of the services that we've already talked about as well. And this could include encapsulations either directly of existing services or interfaces to those services as well. So one of the advantages of this approach is it allows people to sort of vote by their code, by providing code. So if somebody feels like a certain language is important enough or a certain feature is important enough, they can basically contribute a module into this collection, and other people basically can benefit from using that. Let's see. The link up here for people that are interested to Apache actually includes a list of the core and optional modules that are part of Apache, so you can get a flavor for the types of things that that might be involved here as well. Let's see, I want to touch a little bit on OOR federation. Basically, I think of it being a sort of four types of federation that OOR is likely to address. So the simplest case is basically OOR between different OOR instances. And that's easier because basically we control both sides of the interaction and, you know, can specify the protocols, specify the information that's passed, and presumably there should be little or no mapping required there. The second is, I think it's important to really work with the people that are developing, the large number of people that are developing various collaborative ontology development environments. So there's commercial products out there. I mentioned some of the ones here specifically. And basically, we want to cooperate with these folks rather than compete with them. Other existing registers and repositories, I think, are going to be good examples. Mike Grove gave a nice demo last night of using Griddle, basically, to import information from some of those existing repositories. I think having good, simple interfaces that they can easily comply with will be very valuable. And there's also a need to basically incorporate what I would call loose ontologies that are just posted on the World Wide Web. And we want to be able to add metadata to those and apply the repository services to them as well. I think everybody has to have a slide on open. The platform software should definitely be open source. Again, this is kind of looking at Apache as a possible model. Most likely, this can use one of the open source licenses that has been specified by the Open Source Initiative at opensource.org. There's about 40 licenses there to choose from. Peter gave a good characterization of the different types of licenses that are available there. I think that different OOR instantiations basically should be able to set their own policies with respect to ontology content licensing. This provides a lot of flexibility. Many of the public things that we support basically as part of the OOR initiative are likely to focus primarily or exclusively on open source content. But the advantage of this approach is that it accommodates open source content, also uses within many organizations basically behind firewalls, and potentially commercially licensed content. The old research site, you know, is a good example of something that is widely used, available to a broad range of communities, but is not completely open. And the underlying feeling here is that there are a lot of people that contribute and support this effort, and that basically we'd like to be as inclusive as possible in terms of engaging people and having them further the broader goals of the OOR initiative. Let's see. In terms of public services, we expect to have at least one central, if you will, instantiation that would basically provide a showcase for the technology, would probably employ many or all of the optional modules in its instantiation. It should include some sort of registry of the other ORs that are publicly available. You might think of this as sort of a domain name system for OOR. Hopefully would actually federate the ontologies from those instances as well, basically providing a central, logically central interface to that collection. And at least the primary focus would be on open source ontologies in terms of Creative Commons or other similar licensing strategies. Just kind of in terms of names, you know, OOR.org would have been, or .net would have been perfect. Those were already taken, so we went ahead and actually reserved a couple of the long expanded names just to sort of make sure that they would be available in the future. And as Bruce mentioned, Peter Graham has graciously offered some initial infrastructure to support this effort. In terms of the OOR organization, basically at this point it's a collection of volunteers. We'd like to get to the point where we can actually have some funded proposals focused on developing OOR. In the meantime, I think it's very useful for people that are submitting proposals now to actually cite OOR as a collaborator and a model that they're supporting. I think that basically adds credibility to both parties and is a good sort of bootstrapping mechanism going forward from today. You know, it would be great if somebody comes along and actually provides sort of an endowment for supporting the both the software and the public instances. Another option is basically to be adopted by another sustainable organization. Apache, for instance, has absorbed a number of other software projects over the years. And one thing that I think would be useful for us to do almost immediately is to adopt a W3C-like persistence policy, which basically says that the software and the content will continue to be available even if the OOR initiative disbands. One model that I think is useful both technically and organizationally is the Linking Open Data Initiative that's coming out of the Semantic Web Education and Outreach effort interest group. So one view essentially is that ontologies themselves are data or metadata, and it would be useful when we export data to basically adopt their conventions for content. They also have a very nice sort of visual representation of this increasingly large interconnected graph of data sources that are connected. And to some extent, they really represent sort of a community linked by best practices and a cool logo. So a straw man for the next 6 months or so to really essentially get basic OOR capability going is to really build a basic registry and repository. XMDR seems to have many of the characteristics. There's probably other platforms that that we could also consider building off of. I think given the emphasis on federation, that having some federation capability is really critical in the first phase. We would need the initial versions of the architectural framework and the core modules. Among the optional modules, we'd want support for at least one language. Evan suggested two, which I think would be great. Again, there's a good potential for parallelism there as well. And, you know, whatever additional modules basically people are willing to provide would be great. We'd need to select a specific open source license for the platform, and we'd seek to have one or possibly more instantiations. Okay. Going forward, this is the email list that I think most of you are familiar with, as well as the archive for the discussions. We've actually scheduled our next OR telecon for next Friday at noon Pacific, and we're actively soliciting more collaborators and contributors, particularly developers. And if anybody has ideas for a cool logo of our own, that would be terrific.
Thank you.
Okay.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Can you just go back with the, put up the last slide? Yeah.
Last slide, okay.
Now that everything has been done and said, I have a clear picture of, you know, the vision, so to speak. But I don't understand immediately, maybe you could explain it for me, the possible... how do you say, contradiction between the open repository and the storing in one place. So what I understand from what we are doing here, we are aiming for, you call it federated, I call it distributed, so for a non-centralized architecture. But at the same time, we are saying, in a way, we should have a storing place. Is it because you're planning to have a copy of everything? Would the ontologies reside? So the way I would see this work as a possibility is the ontology, which conforms to certain specifications which follow the requirements, openness, whatever, stored a little bit anywhere, independent of the language, I thought. I mean, the language requirements was great to have, but I thought, should we have a language independent? Possibly. I don't know if it is feasible. Yeah. But certainly storage independent, location independent, and other things. But it seems this what I had understood that we were aiming for seems to be contradicting with some of what we are discussing. Could someone explain whether I understand something wrong?
Well, I think as far as storage, some of the ontologies will be stored in the repository, others may be stored externally. I mean, things that are just published on the web, you know, directly at the resolvable URLs, you know, probably should remain there. It's useful to have a cache copy in case those things go away. My expectation is that the registry information would largely be distributed and copied among all the federates. Typically, probably the repository information would actually be stored primarily at one federate, or you know, perhaps replicated a small number for survivability.
So you need an indexing mechanism, like every day, or you need to reindex every day.
I think there's several models. So one would be sort of a, you know, even using something like RSS, basically, to sort of feed updates to basically other federates, so they know about new ontologies that are available and can go grab more detailed information from them.
Because there I see a potential synchronization problem,
right.
Versioning
right.
This and that. But I think the point possibly that I wanted to make is that if we are acknowledging or accepting, even in part, the semantic vision, then the ontologies should be stored wherever they are and have a URI. And then the linked data model that you put up in your picture can happen.
Right.
Otherwise,
right.
It will not happen. So we need to be very clear up front. And at the moment, because we are discussing so many things, which are all very interesting and need to be discussed, I think some of what we are doing does not appear in line with what we want to do yet.
Well, I think some of the ontologies could actually be stored and maintained essentially as the primary copy, you know, within the OOR. And in that sense, you know, using the linking open data naming conventions for the classes that live in the ontology, I think would be reasonable.
Mike?
Yes, Ravi.
Okay. Ravi here. Two, three things. You did answer one question for which I am glad I waited till your talk was over, namely that organizations like W3C are taking hold of those softwares that are going out of date and are archiving and providing it a hosting place in terms of archive. But let me continue the thread. There are two more things that are required for us to make this long persistent store of knowledge. That is a mechanism to have some connection with NARA, NARA, National Archives, and the recording standards. so that in case some organizations drop out or something happens, the content or the metadata structure that we develop does not get lost. Number two, the same kind of agreement, if we expand our vision to international level through UN or some European or other consortiums. That is comment number one. Comment number two is I'm glad to see that there is a place where Peter's organization has agreed to host some phase one test concepts. My request would be that further to being host today, one of the hosts facilitating this, my request would be that somebody like NIST would step up and create a test bed for testing ontologies for minimum required metadata, etc., or provide a test capability on your new sites. So these are two comments I wanted to.
Okay. One clarification with the W3C persistence policy. That basically applies only to the content on W3C's site itself. But it basically provides the licensing terms to make sure that that will continue to be available.
Let me see that.
Sites like archive.org, you know, are other examples of sort of global persistence mechanisms that provide that. And
last 30 years that I have seen this field change, especially of the software and formats, remember 256 kilobyte floppies and see what we are doing today with thumb drives.
Right.
So how are, this is only at the infrastructure level, low level. Hardware, software. But think of how our knowledge paradigm will evolve in the next 30 years and how are we going to carry translation and preservation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is one. So if we can think of those standards that are not likely to change every 3 years, that would be valuable.
Yeah, I agree.
It's clear also from the fact that people are saying this language is out of date. I don't know whether it's CL or PSYC or some of these things are going out, others are coming in, and I saw that on Evan's slide. So just that comment.
Right.
I'll
reserve
the rest.
Okay, good. Thank you for the feedback. Other questions for me or other panelists here?
I had a question. What did you mean by acquisition?
Acquisition.
Yeah, in your slide where you talked about OOR organizational support, right there.
Basically it was the notion that essentially the OOR organization could become adopted or absorbed or, you know, acquired basically by some other organization. Among these, probably Apache would be the most likely one. Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure that that's the optimal exit strategy, but it's one possible strategy that is likely to actually, you know, achieve the goal of sustainability if the other options don't work out. Yes?
Let me say something about that. Now, acquisition implies ownership, and although these organizations are possibly open consortia, to some extent they're not, for whatever reason, which you're not going to discuss here. So in a way, as an alternative to these possible exits, I see a self-sustaining cooperative model whereby, and this kind of follows on a little bit what I was saying earlier, these ontologies should exist. We should help to build a model for them, and we should support the repositories, which I think should be distributed, this is the way I see it, and owned by the respective people who produce them and communities that produce them, and they should be interoperable between them. So in a way, I am a bit skeptical, together with the other things that we've been saying, that kind of they show like they're not complete clarity of, I'm afraid that this effort could end up in another effort that becomes not adopted 100% because it goes in the hands of few people who then have their own internal conflicts, and as opposed to a model which is open for everyone to adopt and to internalize, and so that would ensure maximum adoption. So I would probably push for a conceptual, a knowledge model, a software model if we want, or whatever, something that we should put there, more in the OMG style perhaps. They put the model out there for everyone to use, as opposed to I think there are risks associated with the acquisition.
Yes, and this isn't a complete list of possible strategies going forward. But I mean, there's basically a need both to develop the software initially, which is certainly a labor-intensive task, and that's usually a lot easier if people actually have a means of getting paid to do that, and then just the sustainment cost of actually the sites and the infrastructure involved. So even something as successful as Wikipedia, you know, is soliciting PayPal contributions. So, you know, having a PayPal box basically on your intelligence submission screen, is certainly an option too. Yes.
Catherine Goodyear, is this why you are setting up a separate forum from our Ontolog forum for this activity?
Peter can actually probably address that better than I can.
Sure. This was sort of repeated a few times before because it has been confusing because of the name. First of all, OOR as a team started before Ontology Summit had a theme. So, and the OOR team actually said, I mean, we need a lot of discussion on this particular topic. Could we have the Ontology Summit talk about it? It has the right community and so on. And it got adopted, and that became the Ontology Summit theme. We then went on to make very sure that these two groups actually are working at arm's length. Because within this group, let's say the Ontology Summit participants, I mean, there are people who might potentially fund the OOR effort. And if they were also part of that team, that creates a conflict of interest. So from the very beginning, these things were totally separated. The OOR team, which we called the OOR Initiative, versus the Ontology Summit 2008, which happened to have a theme around ontology, open ontology repository. That's number one. Number two, the incubation within Ontolog is also a temporary exercise, in particular because, as I mentioned yesterday, Ontolog is sort of a discussion group where people, I look at it as the, I mean, if you saw the picture there, a conversation after the day, I mean, at a bar. So it's not serious. Ontolog is not a standards group, and it's not a formal organization. It may or may not even have to be persistent, as opposed to the OOR initiative, which looks for something extremely persistent. And that's why we call that arrangement just an incubation or at least a temporary arrangement, subject to sort of further organizational evolvement, evolution in the OOR initiative. I mean, of course, if you ask me, my ideal situation is we get endowed with, let's say, $20 million, and we can build a core organization that is sustainable out of the endowment. But then, obviously, all the other possibilities are good thinkings.
$2 million will get us started.
It will not endow us.
Okay. It will not endow, but it's year to year.
Okay. Yeah, that's not sustainable.
Is that discussion allowed as to what will be the mechanism for funding this repository?
Right, but that would be a discussion that should go into an OR meeting, which this is not. The OR people are just being invited to present what they have done here. 9th of May, yes, come on 9th of May.
This has been a little less controversial than I expected, so maybe people are just tired. But
that's because I'm holding back.
Yeah. And certainly we'd support things on the more discussion on the email list. Theo?
I think we're at an end. I'd like to, thank Steve Ray and NIST for hosting us again. And we really appreciate it, and hope it supported your interoperability week two. And I'd like to thank you all. Clap for yourselves. And for, you know, persisting to get out a communique that we can all agree on and make this ontology summit a success. Not that one precludes the other, but.
And let me specifically say. Right. That's right.
Mark and Peter.
And just watching Leo stand up here all day, basically, I think he deserves a special thanks. Okay, that's it. That's all. We can go. We're free. There are some people who I know are going to stick around for other events later this week. Susan is having her expedition workshop tomorrow. And if you're into the open applications group or 2D and 3D modeling, there are other things going on in interoperability week. But thank you all for coming. I think this is very valuable. It's a very special group. So I'm very honored to be part of it. Thanks again. Thank you.